How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour one.
My fellow Americans, welcome. It is Eric Erickson here across the United States of America. Donald Trump in court with the selection of a jury trial there. We will get into this nonsensical case in New York. And if you are at all fair-minded, you got to recognize it's a nonsensical case. I'll explain that. But we've got to begin with the Israel-Iran situation, which I think is a bigger story. I was right last week when I said this was going to happen on a Saturday, not a Friday, because Friday's the Sabbath in Muslim countries and Saturday's the Sabbath in Israel. It turned out to be the case. Iran launching a coordinated attack from three fronts designed to overwhelm Israel's air defense system. Iran sent 186 explosive drones. They were slow moving. They could be heard and filmed over Iraq as they moved over Jordanian airspace. They were timed, though, with missiles, 36 cruise missiles and 110 surface-to-surface missiles. Some of Iran's technology actually went through the atmosphere. There were pictures of blasts happening in low Earth orbit of a couple of the missiles Iran sent, really impressive countermeasures from Israel. 186 explosive drones timed for when they arrived into Israel to then have 36 cruise missiles and 110 surface-to-surface missiles that would then overwhelm the Iron Dome system so that Israel would not be able to shoot everything down. An event American intelligence and military officials say was designed to be a mass casualty event. This is from Semafor. Senior U.S. officials said it was designed to cause mass casualties, an assessment that contemplates deliberations on how to respond to Tehran and its military allies. This was a three-front attack. Hezbollah began to fire, the Houthis began to fire, and then Iran began to fire to overwhelm the systems. What's notable is that the U.S., the United Kingdom, the French, Jordanians, and the Saudis responded to Iran. It is a statement of preference between groups that Saudi Arabia and Jordan chose to help Israel, their purported enemy. Anti-drone and anti-missile capabilities shot down 99% of the munitions fired. The firing came, by the way, from Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, in addition to Hezbollah in Lebanon firing, a multi-state attack. Now, you will note, of course, the analysis on MSNBC.
I think everybody thought Iran was going to respond. And I think some people, if you ask them off the record, would say that the manner in which Iran responded was, I mean, it wasn't responsible. It could have caused a lot of damage. But they were telegraphing their punches. They did give Israel a chance to prepare. They did communicate to the United States through third-party intermediaries. They did say that they hoped that this would be the end of it. So they have acted with a degree of restraint, even though the attack was really quite sweeping in its sort of dramatic effect.
Now, this guy is a progressive, David Rothkopf, and that's the analysis you would get on MSNBC with Nicole Wallace, that actually there was a large degree of response. I hear this talking point from the left that Iran telegraphed what it was going to do. Well, Iran had to say it was going to take action against Israel. That was obvious they were going to say they were going to take action against Israel. It actually would have been absurd if they didn't telegraph they were going to take response. But what they did, they didn't do back channels through to the United States. The United States intelligence apparatus picked up what Iran was going to do. You want actual analysis? Go to someone in the military. Retired General McKenzie on Face the Nation.
I think this was a big attack by Iran. I think this was as close to a maximum effort as they could generate, and I'll illustrate it in this way. Iran has over 3,000 missiles of various types scattered around the country. They have about 100, probably a little more than that, missiles largely in western Iran that can target Israel. Based on what the Israelis are saying, I believe they fired most of those weapons at Israel. The Israelis obviously were able to intercept most of them. Iran could not replicate last night's attack tonight if they had to. Now, they also use cruise missiles and they use drones to try to present a multidimensional problem to the Israelis. It was a maximum effort. Now, the Iranians are going to backtrack and talk about moderation. There was nothing moderate about this attack, and I think John Kirby nailed it precisely when he was talking to you earlier about the nature and scope of the Iranian attack. It was indiscriminate, and it was designed to cause casualties, so we should just consider that as we take a look at it. Now,
look, he's right. He's absolutely right. That's retired General McKenzie, and Iran fired everything they could possibly fire at Israel. To say that it was a well-telegraphed event designed for minimal casualties and maximum public statement is a lie. It's simply not true. A little more from the general.
Has the terrorists been reset? I think the Israelis performed magnificently with our assistance and the assistance of other nations in the region, including the United Kingdom. And so I think that now the Iranians have to sit back and consider what they considered their most important capability. Their ballistic missiles, their drones, and their cruise missiles have now been employed in a major combat test, and frankly, that test has failed. So I think Israel this morning is now much stronger than they were yesterday, and Iran is relatively weaker than it was yesterday.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. But, you know, if you go now, this guy, want to play Vali Nasr, he is at Johns Hopkins, and he is someone who has repeatedly condemned Israel. He's from Iran. He's condemned Israel repeatedly, and this is what you got on CNN.
Within its own population and in the region, to essentially taking such a provocative escalation from Israel without responding. On the other hand, they did not want to throw Prime Minister Netanyahu a lifeline of basically shifting the attention from Gaza to Iran and Syria and even drawing the United States into a war with Iran. So they had to react, but they had to react in a way where the emphasis was not really on retaliation, but on deterrence. And I think the deterrence was achieved not just by the military act they carried out yesterday, but essentially by the very effective psychological campaign that they managed through this escalation, both in Israel and also in Western capitals.
You got that. It wasn't really designed to be big. It was just designed to show that Iran has what it takes to respond. I want to break this down for you because the way the media, when you put on the actual generals, they know this was Iran threw everything they had at Israel. And essentially, progressives and the media are punishing Israel for being successful in its countermeasures. Had Iran's 300-plus missiles and drones gotten through and caused a mass casualty event, well, then they wouldn't be able to say that this wasn't a substantial attack. But because Israel's defenses, along with its allies' defenses, were so good, they could say, well, Iran didn't really mean it. Surely, if they meant it, they could have done something. As General McKenzie noted, they literally threw everything they had at Israel and, in fact, exhausted their capacity and supply of missiles because they launched them all at Israel trying to do a massive event. But the spin from the media is that this was just a show of force to show Israel that they were going to respond because Israel blew up a consulate location at their embassy. Israel did not blow up a consulate location at their embassy. I want to explain this to you because the American media, which is pretty anti-Semitic these days and in the bed with the left, has grossly distorted what happened trying to make this a tit-for-tat. This was no tit-for-tat. What Israel blew up in Damascus was the headquarters of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is a terrorist organization, identified as a terrorist organization by most global powers. Within that location was the general of the Quds Force, and that general happened to have been complicit in training and helping Hamas plan the October 7th attack on Israel that killed 1,700 innocent Israelis and took multiple people, hundreds of people, including a bunch of American citizens, hostage. Some of them are still within the control of Hamas in Gaza territory. Israel wasn't blowing up an embassy or a consulate. It was blowing up a terrorist headquarters where one of the masterminds of the October 7th attack was hiding, and he happened to be an Iranian general. To say that Iran is responding to Israel is to say that we bombed Dresden because Hitler bombed London, as opposed to this is war, war is hell, and we're coming every which way we can after you. It was a gross distortion of what happened. Israel had every right to take out that building that included a terrorist training facility with a general complicit in Hamas's attack. Iran's response was just an escalation of war. They threw everything they had at Israel. Israel responded successfully, and now they're like, whoa, we didn't really mean it. It was just for show. We had to do something to show our allies we were going to respond to Israel. Only because it wasn't successful is that the response. And what's notable to me, and this really is the most notable thing, is progressives and the media together are running with Iran's propaganda campaign that they telegraphed it in advance and it wasn't a strong show of force, therefore Israel shouldn't respond. I mean, the moment the missiles started flying and the drones came, you had people on these news networks say, well, I mean, this can't be for real because we're hearing the drones flying over Iraq and therefore it takes them so long and they're so slow and Israel now has time to prepare. This can't be real. Yes, they were designed to show up about the time the missiles were launched to overwhelm Israel's Iron Dome so the missiles with maximum impact could get through. Had it been really successful, had there been a mass casualty event, as American U.S. officials are telling the media this was designed to be, the media would come up with an excuse for why Israel should not respond. But because it wasn't successful, the media has come up with a response for why Israel shouldn't respond. If only those pesky Jews had not been so successful in shooting down missiles. That's ultimately what it comes down to with the press these days. What you are hearing from the media is the wishful thinking of anti-Semites who do not like Israel, who are fine with Hamas winning, and who have decided to side with the terrorists because so many people in the American media as well are scared to death of the anti-Semites in Michigan not turning out for Joe Biden and maybe Donald Trump gets reelected. Now, as to the response, this White House and this president continue to tell the world don't, and they ignore him. John
Kirby. It's diplomatic success. It's quite an achievement. You ought to think about what that success sends as a message to Iran and to the region and consider, how important the impact of what you proved you could do on Saturday night really is. The president doesn't want to see this thing widen, doesn't want to see a war with Iran. And again, that's been a consistent message from him.
That was John Kirby on MSNBC, and then he hopped over to CNN to say the same thing.
It's been doing, including putting U.S. forces in the fight Saturday night to defend Israel, which I think is the first time it's ever been done, has been to de-escalate, to take the tensions down, to put resources in the region, to send a strong signal to anybody who might act inimical to our interest or the interest of our allies and partners that it's unacceptable.
Every time Joe Biden says don't to one of Israel's enemies, they do. And yet he expects Israel to not do when he says don't and to punish Israel if Israel doesn't do. He's not punishing Iran. I mean, we've done waivers for Iran in the nuclear program. We've done turned a blind eye to Iran selling its oil to fund its programs. The only group that seems to get punished by Joe Biden when it ignores him is Israel. This was a massive attack by Iran on Israel. Israel, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, France, the United Kingdom, and the United States were able to successfully repel a multi-front attack by Iran. And now Israel is going to be penalized by the Democrats and the press for being so successful. one more time. It's worth hearing again, General McKenzie.
I think this was a big attack by Iran. I think this was as close to a maximum effort as they could generate, and I'll illustrate it in this way. Iran has over 3,000 missiles of various types scattered around the country. They have about 100, probably a little more than that, missiles largely in western Iran that can target Israel. Based on what the Israelis are saying, I believe they fired most of those weapons at Israel. The Israelis obviously were able to intercept most of them. Iran could not replicate last night's attack tonight if they had to.
That's how big Iran's attack was. They launched everything they had at Israel and wiped out their arsenal. And it's notable that the MSNBC talking heads have on a bunch of progressives who are loudly and vocally condemnatory of Israel to say, this was just for show. Iran didn't really mean it. MSNBC is becoming increasingly terrorist propaganda. And again, it's worth pointing out repeatedly, we've had two mass political assassination attempts in this country in the last decade. Both of the people targeted the right. They were MSNBC viewers. That network is in the pocket of the wrong team.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to the fine folks on KJCE in Austin, Texas. Delighted to have you. Finally, I've got a station in Texas. May we keep growing. KJCE in Austin, Texas picked us up today, 1340 AM. Delighted to have you guys. The phone number here, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, I will tell you, my son and I had a great time at the Masters. And I was really proud of him. He's 15 and is used to having his iPad or his Nintendo Switch. He went an entire day without a screen, and a couple hours into the Masters commented how he wished it was like that every day, that he talked to people talked to him, strangers talking to strangers. Nobody could have a cell phone. Nobody stared at a screen. And he thought that was just a wonderful thing, which I love. And I got to tell you, the juniors program, we were into Augusta National within 5 minutes. They saw he didn't have a badge, and the adults around him did, asked if it was the junior program. We said yes. Had a guy whisk us straight into a line. My son met a member of Augusta National in a green jacket, gave him some memorabilia that nobody else gets, and in we got, and it was fantastic. It was a great time, and good for Scottie Scheffler. What a great guy. We'll get into that later. Right now, I got to tell you about Hillsdale College and Imprimis. I have been reading Imprimis since I was in law school when I discovered it was free. It is completely free, and you can get it by going to ericforhillsdale.com today. E-R-I-C-K, ericforhillsdale.com. Imprimis is a monthly newsletter from Hillsdale College that contains some of the great thinking of the conservative movement, whether it's transcripts of speeches given at Hillsdale to just submitted writings from conservative thought leaders, Heather McDonald, Chris Rufo, Victor Davis Hanson, even Dr. Larry Arnn of Hillsdale. It's great. It's really useful, too. I've got my entire collection somewhere of just piles and piles of Imprimises. I have a hard time throwing them away. I always go back to them. A lot of the ideas that I develop come from reading the ideas at Imprimis. You can get it completely for free, no obligation on your part. Just go to ericforhillsdale.com today and put in your address, and you'll be able to start subscribing to Imprimis. No charge to you. It's part of their educational mission at Hillsdale College. ericforhillsdale.com, E-R-I-C-K. ericforhillsdale.com. Go check them out today. You know, one of the hardest things about doing this show is impulse control. I see something and I was like, oh, I want to talk about that. But I got to talk about other stuff that I think is more important first. And I'll get into the Trump trial. Top of the second hour. I want to welcome the folks listening on KJC in Austin, Texas. Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show. The phone number, should you like to be on the program, is 877-973-7425. As always, very important, if you text Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 33777, you can sign up for the daily email. That's very top link. You can, you name it. You can find the show notes, the live stream, the podcast, email, anything you need for the program. I need to paint this picture for you, and for some of you, this will be a little repetitive if you're a longtime listener, but we've got a massive new audience that has grown over time, and I really need to spend a few moments with you on this. As regular listeners know, I grew up overseas in Dubai from 1980 to 1990, and while I was there the entire time, if you went to the library at the time, there was this thing, we called it the Media Center, and they had these books called the Encyclopedia, the World Book and the Encyclopedia Britannica. They were these paper volumes that were like, for you kids these days, Wikipedia or the internet, all the information of the world in these books. If you pulled out the I book and you flipped to Israel, the pages would have been torn out. This is in Dubai, the most liberal city in the Middle East. The pages of the encyclopedias and the almanacs were all torn out in reference to Israel. In our textbooks, Israel was redacted. The flag was blacked out. The country was blacked out, or they pasted over it the word Palestine. They would black out in the modern history books references to Israel. When I was in ninth grade, I'm in a class of some really, really brilliant kids, and we're in Athens, Greece, at the Agora on the base of the Acropolis. Yes, it was a class trip in ninth grade. We went to Greece from Dubai to Athens. And our teacher points to a flag. It is white with blue bars and a star in the middle. And he asks us if we know what country that flag represents, and none of us know. And we've had to memorize all the flags in our geography class, except that flag of Israel. We weren't allowed to know what it was. It was completely redacted. It was blanked out. We did not know. That's the level of censorship in the Middle East until 2021, after Donald Trump's Abraham Accords. He really does deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. There are some will say, well, it happened in spite of him, or he was kept out of the way. It was whatever. Donald Trump's name's on it. The Abraham Accords, Donald Trump's administration, was able to bring peace in the Middle East to an extent that others said was impossible. John Kerry scoffed and said there's no way, that there will never be peace in the Middle East without dealing with the Palestinian situation. And there was peace until Iran, using Hamas, started a war on October 7th. The Times of Israel is reporting today Saudi Arabian leadership now says and believes that Iran provoked Hamas to attack in order to stop Saudi Arabia from normalizing relations with Israel. That's a pretty big statement, because Saudi Arabia was on the verge of full normalization of ties with Israel and stopped at the last minute after the October 7th attack and Israel's response, and now says Iran did this. Bahrain, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, they all now have normalized ties with Israel. You can fly now from Tel Aviv to Dubai. When I was a kid, you weren't even allowed in Israel. In fact, if you showed up, they gave you a special page that wasn't inside your passport, so you could easily remove it to have no proof you had been to Israel if you were going to a Middle Eastern country. Now you can fly between Tel Aviv and Dubai and Abu Dhabi. You can fly to Bahrain from Tel Aviv. Not when I was a kid. When I was a kid, literally you could not even call Israel. If you tried to dial Israel from Dubai, the line simply did not work. And now you can. On Saturday, Iran attacked Israel, and it used forward operating positions and terrorist operatives in southern Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, and in Iran proper to launch missiles and drones at Israel. The U.S., the U.K., and France launched their air forces to shoot down the slow-moving Iranian drones. They were joined by the Saudis and the Jordanians and the Emiratis that authorized American air launches from their positions. Quietly, Kuwait is not involved in this, but there are some reports that suggested Kuwait as well might have been involved in helping Israel. I'm not sure about that one, but it's intriguing if so. The Greater Sunni Middle Eastern Alliance is siding with Israel against Iran. And that is very notable, and it's not getting the attention that it should be getting, other than I did see today there is an article in the Wall Street Journal. As hundreds of Iranian drones and missiles winged across the Middle East Saturday night, a defensive line of radars, fighter jets, warships, and air defense batteries from Israel, the U.S., and a half dozen other countries was already activated against the long-feared attack from Iran. Almost nothing got through to Israel. The formidable display of collective defense was the accumulation of a decades-old but elusive U.S. goal to forge closer military ties between Israel and its longtime Arab adversaries in an effort to combat a growing common threat from Iran. But the U.S.-led effort to protect Israel in the days and hours before the Iranian attack had to overcome numerous obstacles, including fears by Gulf countries as being seen as coming to Israel's aid at a time when relations are badly strained by the war in Gaza. Much of the cooperation Saturday night that led to the shooting down of the Iranian-directed barrage needed to be forged on the fly, and many details about the role played by Saudi Arabia and other Arab governments are being closely held. Israel and the U.S. forces intercepted most of the Iranian drones and missiles, but they were able to do so in part because Arab countries quietly passed along intelligence about Tehran's attack plans, opened their airspace to warplanes, shared radar tracking information, or in some cases, supplied their own forces to help, officials said. The operation was the culmination of years of U.S. effort to break down political and technological barriers that thwarted military cooperation between Israel and the Sunni Arab governments, officials said. Instead of a Middle East version of the NATO alliance, the U.S. has focused on less formal region-wide air defense cooperation to blunt Tehran's growing arsenal of drones and missiles, the very weapons that threatened Israel Saturday night. I can't emphasize to you what a massively big deal this is. Typically, Israel and these Arab governments have used the United States or the United Kingdom as intermediaries so they can say they don't talk to each other. So the Israelis talk to the U.S. and the U.K., which relay the information to the Saudis, which talk back through the U.S. and the U.K. to Israel, and this happens also for military cooperation until Saturday. On Saturday, for the first time, Israel and Saudi Arabia's militaries talked to each other. They still don't have formal diplomatic relations. They still officially do not talk to each other, Israel and Saudi Arabia. But American officials, Saudi officials, Egyptian officials, and Israeli officials are all confirming that on Saturday, for the first time, Israel and Saudi Arabia directly coordinated with each other through their militaries to stop Iran. This is a monumentally big deal in the Middle East and around the world for this to happen. We in this country have a hard time recognizing the significance of this. But these are beyond the Hatfields and the McCoys. This is not a Crips and Blood issue. This is just an incredibly big divide. It is a religious, it is theological, it is ethnic, it is sociopolitical, it is every division imaginable, all rolled into one. And it's begun those divisions to crumble because the enemy of our enemy is our friend. And Iran hates Saudi Arabia, and Iran hates Israel, and Israel and Saudi Arabia are realizing they have to work together. The Jordanians and the Egyptians have always had a quiet relationship with Israel. Suddenly, the relations are warming. So Saudi Arabia and all of the Middle East are Sunni Muslims. Iran is Shiite Muslim. Shia, they call it, because they don't want to say Shiite lest people think they're saying something else. Essentially, the division goes back to the death of the Prophet Muhammad. Should someone of renown lead the clerics, or should a direct descendant of Muhammad lead the clerics? The Shiites believe only a direct descendant of Muhammad can lead the clerics. The Sunni believe that a wise cleric can lead. They do not have to be a blood relative of Muhammad. From there spun off various theological divisions. Those theological divisions became geopolitical divisions. Those divisions have festered now into an Iranian state that acknowledges and uses terrorism, including in Saudi Arabia, to undermine Saudi Arabia, uses the Houthi to wage war on Saudi Arabia by proxy, and has been spreading around the world terrorism. That upended on Saturday night when, for the first time, Saudi Arabia and Israel directly connected militarily to stop Iran. And that is a huge deal. It's a huge deal. The problem is Joe Biden. Because Joe Biden doesn't care for Israel and Joe Biden doesn't care for Saudi Arabia. China has been wooing Saudi Arabia. China has been wooing Iran. China could woo Israel. China could pull them away from our sphere of influence at a time that our sphere of influence should be pretty dominant. But Joe Biden holds grudges, and Joe Biden doesn't like the Saudis or the Israelis. And it's very possible that the Biden administration screws up this beginning stages of peaceful relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Never underestimate Joe Biden's ability to screw things up. But it's worth pointing out this monumental milestone in Middle Eastern history that is global history that will, if it's done right, pay dividends to us and buy us a peace dividend in the Middle East and actually help settle the issue in the Middle East. As Iran expands terrorism around the world, we've got a growing number of countries willing to cooperate together to stop Iran. And that helps us because we are ultimately the target of Iran. It's a very big thing and worth calling your attention to. It's also worth calling your attention to Vision Computers. For $179 a year, not a month, $179 a year, Vision Computer can be your go-to IT solution. Even if you don't have a computer from Vision Computers, they can help you. They can help you with email. They can help you with printer support. They can help you with your tech issues. They can remote into your computer to resolve issues, and you get a special phone number you get to call. And in 15 seconds or less, faster than a Google search, you get your answer to whatever is ailing your computer so that you can be good at what you're good at and not have to be good at your computers. They can also build computers for you. They can build you laptops or desktops. They built my son a gaming PC. He loves it. So they'll spend time with you on the tech specs that you want so that your computer lasts you a long time, and then they'll service it. But again, even if you did not buy computers for Vision, if you're a small business and the computers in your office did not come from Vision Computers, it's okay. For $179 a year, they'll become your tech support solution. They've got thousands of five-star Google reviews, and they can help anybody anywhere in the United States, any company anywhere in the United States. You don't have to go get a one-size-fits-all big-box computer solution. You can let Vision build them. But if you've already done that and you don't like your tech support, you don't like having nobody to talk to, Vision can become the people you call with your existing computers for $179 a year, not a month. VisionComputers.com or 404Compute. Call them at 404Compute. Tell them I sent you. You get an even better deal. 404Compute or VisionComputers.com. Any of you nationwide can take advantage of this. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here across the nation. The phone number 877-973-7425. Y'all, this is just too good not to share. I want to read you a series of tweets because they are eye-opening tweets about an awful, an affluent white female urban liberal. Here's one. Lots of jokes about leaving the U.S., and I get it. But as someone with cis white mobility privilege, I'm thinking I'm staying and investing in ridding ourselves of the specter of tyranny. That said, I know a lot of people have neither mobility nor physical safety in our current systems. For those who need to seek safety elsewhere, of course. For those who can't, we must center our rights and safety. Here's another tweet. I know that hysterical white woman voice. I was taught to do it. I've done it. It's a disturbing recognition. While I don't recall ever using it to deliberately expose another person to immediate physical harm on my own cognizance, it's not impossible. That is whiteness. And another. And I'm white, so my hair doesn't automatically carry with it the freight of my race, worth, and everyone else's encoded assumptions and biases. And another. Lots of jokes. Oh, wait, no, I've read that one. Here's one more. I mean, sure, looting is counterproductive, but it's hard to be mad about protests not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression founded on treating people's ancestors as private property. The author of all of those tweets is Catherine Mayer, the now head of National Public Radio. The CEO of NPR tweeted all of those things. I mean, sure, looting is counterproductive, but it's hard to be mad about protests not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression founded on treating people's ancestors as private property. This is the head of NPR. It comes as even people at NPR are beginning to speak out that NPR has become part of the Borg hive mind of the left, with no thought given to accurate portrayals of people other than the left and no use in being fair to people on the other side. And now the new CEO turns out to be an affluent female white urban liberal who has no desire to be fair to the other side, because that, of course, would be white privilege. Is it any wonder NPR keeps losing listeners? This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan, wherever you are in the nation, including those of you new to the show in Austin, Texas. First Liberty can help your business grow. If you're buying a building, buying a franchise, deals like that, you need $250,000 or more. First Liberty specializes in helping businesses grow. If you're tired of your bank changing the lender you deal with every time, First Liberty's been around since the 90s. Same family, the Frosts, in charge. They're great people. They can help you. Reach out to them. FirstLibertyGA.com. Tell them I sent you. Get all their contact info's there. FirstLibertyGA.com. When we come back, Donald Trump's trial in New York City begins today. And if you are a fair-minded person, it should bother you greatly. I want to tell you why.